ஓம் நமோ பகவதே வாசுதேவாய, ஓம் நமோ பகவதே வாசுதேவாய, ஓம் நமோ பகவதே வாசுதேவாய. So this morning we are reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 6, Chapter 1, entitled The History of the Life of Ajamila, Text 51. Tat etat sodasha kalam lingam shaktitrayam mahat dhate nusmra nusamsritim pumsi harshashoka bhayartidam tad etam sodashakalam tadetad sodashakalam lingam shakti trayam mahat lingam shakti trayam mahat dhate anusmitim pumsi dhate nusam smritim pumsi harsha shoka bhayartidam tadetat sodashakalam lingam shakti trayam mahat dhate nu samsmritim pumsi harsha shoka bhayartidam tadetam sodashakalam lingam shakti trayam mahat dhate nu samsmritim pumsi harsha shoka bhayartidam. மாதாஜி, லிங்கம் சக்தி த்ரயம் Okay, word by word translation. Tat, therefore, etat, this, sodashakalam, made of 16 parts, namely the 10 senses, the mind, and the 5 sense objects. Lingam, the subtle body. Shakti trayam, the effect of the 3 modes of material nature. Mahat, insurmountable. Dhate, gives. Anusamsmritim, almost perpetual. Rotation and transmigration in different types of bodies. Pumsi, unto the living entity. Harsha, jubilation. Shoka, lamentation. Bhaya, fear. Arti, misery. Dham, which gives. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. The subtle body is endowed with 16 parts. The 5 knowledge-acquiring senses, the 5 working senses, the 5 objects of sense gratification, and the mind. The subtle body is an effect of the 3 modes of material nature. It is composed of insurmountably strong desires, and therefore it causes the living entity to transmigrate from one body to another in human life, animal life, and life as a demigod. When the living entity gets the body of a demigod, he is certainly very jubilant. When he gets a human body, he is always in lamentation. And when he gets the body of an animal, he is always afraid. In all conditions, however, he is actually miserable. His miserable condition is called samsmriti, or transmigration in material life. Purport. The sum and substance of material conditional life is explained in this verse. The living entity, the 17th element, is struggling alone, life after life. The struggle is called samsmriti, or material conditioned life. In Bhagavad Gita, it is said that the force of material nature is surmountably strong. Daivihyesha gunamai mama maya duratya. Material nature harasses the living entity in different bodies. But if the living entity surrenders to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he becomes free from this entanglement. As confirmed in Bhagavad Gita, mam eva ye prapadyante mayam etam tarantite. Thus his life becomes successful. Omagyanati mirandasya gyananjana shalakya chakshurun yutam yena tasmai shri gurave namaham. Namo Vishnu Paraya Krishna Vreshta Bhutale Shimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Niti Namini Namaste Sarasvati Devi Gauravani Pracharne Viru Vishesha Shunyavadi Prashchiche Deshitarine Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shirveta Gadadara Shosari Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare Tat Etam Sudasha Kalam Lingam Shakti Trayamahat Dhatyanu Samsmritim Pumsi Harsha Shoka Bhayatidam. The subtle body is endowed with 16 parts, the 5 knowledge-acquiring senses, the 5 working senses, the 5 objects of sense gratification, and the mind. The subtle body is an effect of the 3 modes of material nature. It is composed of insurmountably strong desires, and therefore it causes the living entity to transmigrate from one body to another in human life, animal life, and life as a demigod. When the living entity gets the body of a demigod, he is certainly very jubilant. When he gets a human body, he is always in lamentation. And when he gets the body of an animal, he is always afraid. In all conditions, however, he is actually miserable. His miserable condition is called samsmriti, or transmigration in material life. So here we come again across one of the very instructive verses that has been spoken by Yamadutas. They're replying on the inquiries of the Vishnu Dutas, which are trying to assert which are actually the highest religious principles. We'll see, and we have some kind of experience at least, that in this world everybody tries to assert what the real religious principles are. That's not a very easy task. So here also in this particular conversation, this is something that is trying to be kind of concluded, that is trying to be understood. And as we will see later on, none other than Yamaraj himself actually will have to intervene and present the highest religious principles. Whenever we go across some kind of a person who is practicing spiritual life, he will definitely have some kind of a conception of religion and religious practice. That is undoubtedly there. We know that there are different divisions of faith, divisions of understanding of spiritual life. This has been described in 17th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, divisions of faith, according to the modes of material nature. So depending on person's association with a particular mode of material nature, namely whether it is tamas, rajas or sattva, that person will develop some kind of a religious understanding or the practice of that particular religious, whatever group or affiliation that he is, you know, with any particular, so to say, process. So he will have particular type of understanding. The worst, of course, is the one which is beyond any kind of religious authorized knowledge, and that is mentioned in the 16th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, when Krishna himself states that those who actually consider religion to be irreligion and irreligion to be religion, that those are demoniac personalities. So that's the worst case, because sometimes people will again claim something is religious and something is not, based on their own sense gratification. So that's demoniac. I take whatever I like and I kind of try to present it as something authoritative, wherein actually it's not authoritative at all. So that's demoniac. And we see that people very often have that kind of tendency, because it is very easy to utilize something that is acknowledged, that is already recognized, that has some weight, you know, that has some influence amongst the people, and then try to pervert this so that it suits their own personal sense gratification. So the most common tendency to do that is pretty much prominent in our, you know, conditioned state. So that's what people very often will do. That's why we find a lot of different things, well, pretty much horrible things also going on in the name of the religion, whereas actually we understand it's not religion at all. But to present this and establish it, it is very difficult. It's not such an easy task. It requires a lot of purity, it requires a lot of shakti, it requires a lot of strength. Like we know, during the time of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Maharaj, he had very, very thankless task, so to say, to re-establish the real religious principles. People considered also what the Dharma is, what the Dharma is not. You know, they had their own different kinds of conceptions. Therefore, he listed that there are 13 apasampradayas that are going on in the name of Vaishnava Dharma. But what was actually Vaishnava Dharma, that kind of understanding has been completely lost. So they were all doing all different kinds of illicit and adharmic, practically, activities, again, in the name of religion. And they were considering that, yes, this is the right path that we have to follow. This is the Dharma that we have to follow. And then we will achieve perfection. It is very interesting also, one of the worst examples of those times was the Smarta practices, which also was very much influencing those who were professing to be Vaishnavas themselves. And especially some rituals that have been kind of conducted during the Shraddha ceremonies have been done on Ekadashi itself. And on Ekadashi, those who are performing the Shraddha ceremony, and of course feed the Smarta Brahmanas and remunerate them in various ways, they were supposed to offer meat to their ancestors. So that has been also practiced in the name of Dharma itself. So there are so many details, so many things, so many horrible actually things that have been going on in the name of Dharma, in the name of the religion. And that's why practically the whole essence of Gaudiya Vaishnavism or the teachings of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu have been practically lost. Have been lost but altogether practically. Except in few saintly souls who have been still kind of preserving it. And then until the time of Bhaktivinoda Thakur when he came and he practically revived the whole Gaudiya Vaishnava spirit again. But he did it in a very mild way. This was one of the, again, issues between Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Maharaj, who has been older brother, and his younger brother, Lalita Prasad. Because Bhaktivinoda Thakur's preaching strategy was to present original, pure teachings of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in a way that won't be disturbing so much to the others. He was trying to kind of bring into the fold different kinds of practitioners of other Apa Sampradayas. Apa Sampradayas means Sampradayas. They're claiming to be in the descending line of whatever of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's teachings, but actually they were not. So they were purporting basically that they are the real followers, and that's the way that spiritual life is supposed to be practiced, but actually it was not authorized whatsoever. So he was trying, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he was trying in a very mild way, sway over those practitioners of these different Apa Sampradayas. Anyway, we won't go into detail what they consider to be proper and what they consider to be improper. But the way that he tried to do that was pretty tactful and very kind of friendly. But after some time it turned out that actually it wasn't so effective. So then Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Maharaj, he changed his preaching strategy. He became very hard and heavy, uncompromising whatsoever. And now, because of this drastic change, because that's something that nobody was used to, he was directly attacking those people who were practicing Dharma, so to say, or teachings of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in absolutely wrong way. Many of them got upset. They didn't like such kind of a presentation and such kind of approach of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Maharaj. Even his younger brother, Lalita Prasad, was kind of objecting, saying that this is not the way that Bhaktivinoda Thakur had done. And definitely it wasn't the way. But again, according to time, place and circumstances, we have to understand what is the way to present certain kind of teaching? What is the way how to engage others in the devotional service? So that they can benefit, they can spiritually advance. So he realized that. And as an acharya, that was actually his duty. That was actually his right to understand time, place, circumstances and by his own precepts, by his own example, to show actually what is really the way and how things have to be presented and how things should be practiced. So he was very uncompromising. So much so that he was even threatened. In some cases, even Srila Prabhupada, he told one anecdote wherein it has been said that one of the sampradayas, that one of the groups that has become very much upset, that had bribed the local police commissioner with 25,000 rupees at that time, which was a huge amount, saying that we will do something with Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati and you're not supposed to react in any way. But that police commissioner, but somewhat still people had some piety. So he informed Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Maharaj himself, saying that this is what is going on. So you should be careful, but we won't do anything because after all you're a sadhu. We do these things, we take the bribe, we do all kinds of stuff, but you're a sadhu, so in your case, you know, we don't dare to interfere. So this is how Dharma actually is a very delicate thing. It's a very delicate principle that we have to understand how to deal with. It's not an easy thing. So Bhaktisiddhanta was actually, he was just bold, he was fearless in his mission of presenting the teachings as actually they are and how they're supposed to be presented. And in his mission of exposing those who were in the garb of religious personalities, actually presenting irreligion and making people even more sinful and gliding them further down the hell. So he was very staunch, very strong. So therefore, teaching as they are, it's not easy to understand. Many times we will find even amongst devotees, not just in terms of managerial principle, not just in terms of preaching strategies, not just in so many different ways, there's going to be some differentiations in opinions, how to do this, how to do that. Again, not necessarily that something has to be wrong. There are different ways of understanding and views that they can be accommodated. But there are different things, that different differentiations actually, through which we can understand how that some things can be done in various kinds of ways. So especially like Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, who was an acharya, he definitely understood how things are supposed to be done. And at particular time, place and circumstance. So that's why he came up with so many different kind of, even you may say, innovative ways to present teachings of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So here what we find also is that Yamadutas and Vishnudutas are discussing what are those principles really of Dharma. What is the Dharma? How things are supposed to be followed? Because here what we understand is that in the case of Jamila by all means was to be considered a very simple person. He committed so many horrible things, which we already heard of. But still now Vishnudutas are coming and saying, no, actually a Jamila is not a simple person. And they're requesting Yamadutas to explain, okay, what is the conception of Dharma? What is your understanding? Therefore, who is sinful, who is pious, and how the religious principles are supposed to be practiced. Later on, as we will see, Yamadutas themselves will not be able to come to the conclusion. They will have to approach Yamaraj, and they will understand that actually even Yamaraj himself, it's not the supreme as they were considering, that there is somebody even beyond Yamaraj himself. And then the principles of real religion, of the real Dharma, cannot be presented or cannot be given by any ordinary being, be it a human being or a demigod, nobody who is conditioned within this material world, only by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Dharmam su sakshat bhagavat pranitam. Only Supreme Personality of Godhead. He is the one who really establishes what the Dharma is. Now again, when we speak about the Dharma itself, it's a very, very subtle principle, very delicate principle. And again, how to understand it? It requires somebody who has experience, somebody who has purity. So it's not a very easy thing. What is Dharma like what we know now? For this age, Kali Yuga was not Dharma in some other ages. We know, like the process of self-realization, we have it chanting now. In earlier ages, it was something else. Of course, it's not that other processes are not working, but they don't have, to that extent, such a potency as chanting of the holy name. And again, then everybody else, if you consider Dharma from various other aspects, you know, Grihasthas have their Dharma in terms of Varnashrama. Brahmacharis have their Dharma. Sannyasis have their Dharma. Ladies have their Dharma. Husbands have their Dharma again. Like in terms of Grihastha Ashram again. And in so many various kinds of ways, there are so many levels, there are so many different kinds of Dharmas. So which one is to be practiced? Which one is, again, at some point, is to be considered more important again than the other, because sometimes they might be conflicting again. And sometimes again somebody may bring up different points, stressing more on one kind of a dharma or duty and somebody else on another. So there can be a huge issue again. Which one is more important, which one is to be practiced, and how to practice things. So therefore here this discussion is going on, what to do now with the Jamila. Whether he is to be considered punishable or not. Like another interesting, there is an interesting example in Mahabharata where we understand that the Dharma also for the humans and for the demigods is different. It's a very interesting story where Narjuna went to the Amaravati, Indra's planet, Indra's capital, and when Urvashi became attracted to him, and she proposed Arjuna to spend some time with her. But Arjuna was terrified. Arjuna just couldn't conceive of anything as such. Because said Urvashi was his grandmother. Where such kind of consideration is not applicable to the demigods. For them, it's not a principle at all. They have a different kind of dharma. So these different kinds of views can be very conflicting, and it's very, as I said, it requires a lot of purity, it requires a lot of experience, how to apply any particular teaching, how to apply any shastric information in our daily practice, again, considering the time and place. So it's a very subtle thing. So here, in this particular verse, Yamadutas are describing the subtle body and the conditioning of the soul, how it gets conditioned here in this material world. It said that it's endowed with the 16 parts, the 5 knowledge-acquiring senses, 5 working senses, 5 objects of sense gratification, and the mind. The subtle body is an effect of the 3 modes of material nature. It is composed of insurmountably strong desires and therefore causes the living entity to transmigrate from one body to another in human life, animal life, and as a demigod. So in these different various kinds of ways, living entity is transmigrating. And what is it bound with? It's bound with a subtle body. We know when person leaves the body, his soul is carried, as in Bhagavad Gita has been described, like the wind carries the aromas. So in a similar way, that subtle body carries the soul from one body to another. So it's not that the soul is affected. So it's not that the wind is affected. But those aromas, those particular subtleties, are carried from one place to another. So in a similar way, our subtle body, which is composed of ego, false ego, intelligence, and mind, is carried from one body into another body. So we are bound by here, as it is mentioned, unsurmountable desires. We have so many different kinds of desires trying to enjoy in this material world. So many material desires. And which is very difficult actually even sometimes to fulfill. And even if they get fulfilled, again there is no happiness, there is frustration. As it is mentioned here, at the end of the verse, it said that when living entity gets the body of a demigod, he's certainly very jubilant. When he gets a human body, he's always in lamentation. And if he gets the body of an animal, he's always afraid. In all conditions, however, he's actually miserable. His miserable condition is called samsmriti, or transmigration in material life. Okay, thank you. Well, let's see if it works. I have some cough, so have to reciprocate. That's going to be a tough one. So the basic 2 principles in material life, Srila Prabhupada explains, are what? Hankering and lamentation. It's like pendulum. All the times changing from one conditioning to another. We hanker after something, and even when we achieve it, we're not satisfied, and therefore we are lamenting. Or even if you achieve any particular, whatever, object or being placed in any particular situation, even if we have it, it's temporary, because this is the nature of this material world. Dukkhalayam ashashvatam. It's temporary and it's full of miseries. So even if we get something, as it is stated here, if we get a body of a demigod, it's a jubilant situation. But we know how demigods, they enjoy, and actually it's never satiating. Why? Because it's not satiating the soul. Even the circumstances might be more favorable. There is no disease. There is no old age. Just imagine what kind of situation that is. But still they have to die. So at certain moment it is explained that they wear a garland. And when the garland fades, it gets a little dry. They understand, okay, now I have to leave the body. And they become very miserable. Because no more enjoyment. They have to leave that post that they have been occupying. They have to leave the place that they've been staying. It's gone. No more. So it's a definitely situation of lamentation after all. Although it has been jubilant at some particular point. And then human body, it is said, living entity, when he achieves that kind of state and that kind of situation, he's always lamenting. Always lamenting. Because body itself means misery. Body is filled with so many difficulties, so many miseries. జన్మ మృత్యు జ్వర వ్యాధి దుఃఖ దోషను దర్శనం ఆధ్యాత్మిక అది భౌతిక అది దైవిక సో మచ్ సఫరింగ్ అండ్ దెన్ అగైన్ ఇఫ్ ది పర్సన్ ఇస్ డిగ్రేడెడ్ టు ద ఎనిమల్ ఫార్మ్ ఆఫ్ లైఫ్ దెన్ ఇట్స్ ఆల్వేస్ అఫ్రేడ్ జస్ట్ సీ ఎనీ కాక్రోచ్ ఆర్ సంథింగ్ బెడ్ బగ్స్ యెస్టర్డే సో వన్ ఇన్ ఆశ్రమ్ హారబుల్ బట్ స్టిల్ దే ఆర్ అఫ్రేడ్ దే జస్ట్ రన్నింగ్ దే అండర్స్టాండ్ యు పుట్ ద లైట్ అండ్ ఇమీడియట్లీ దే విల్ ట్రై టు ఫైండ్ సమ్ డార్క్ కార్నర్ టు హైడ్ Always afraid. Birds here, sparrows, these pigeons here, always afraid. Of course, these pigeons already, they're not afraid of anyone. Just keep on doing their business everywhere. They're already used to it. But in general, every living entity is practically afraid, especially in such kind of lower form of the life. So this is the situation, that in this material world, practically, there is no happiness. So if we are attached to this kind of condition, we are cultivating different kinds of unsurmountable desires, hoping to be happy, hoping to be satisfied. It's impossible. Because like Prabhupada said, actually here in the purport, it's a very powerful purport, that the 17th element, of course different elements, these subtle bodies has been described, but 17th element, and which is the spirit soul, is always struggling alone in this life. We are alone. We always seek for some association. We always seek for some kind of as it is said, human being is a social animal. It's very difficult to be alone. Unless you're a sadhu and you have association of the Paramatma, that's a different thing. But in general, we always look for some kind of association. We always look for some encouragement. We always look for somebody who's going to appreciate us. We always look for someone who is going to encourage us. We need some association. We need some interaction, because this is the nature of the soul. And impersonalism, therefore, also as a principle, it doesn't work, because you cannot be impersonal in Brahma Jyoti for a long time. It becomes boring, unsatisfying to the soul itself. By the nature, soul is social. Soul has to have some interaction. And definitely the ultimate interaction is with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, with the Super Soul. But in the material world, because the living entity is so conditioned, he doesn't know about the Super Soul. And any other interaction, any other relationship won't satisfy the soul. Because it's based on this material principle of sense gratification. And actually selfish sense gratification, meaning that unless there is that principle of bhakti or exchange or surrender or sacrifice for someone or something else, the soul won't be satisfied. If it's just selfishly trying to exploit somebody else for their own sense gratification material, again, there won't be any satisfaction. Actually, we'll end up in the frustration. And we know that this world is the world where we practice the path of pavarga, papa bhava ma. It's pavarga, path of entanglement. Whereas the apavarga path, or liberating path, means no more hard work, no more foaming, no more frustration, no more disappointment, no more, again, fear, and no more death. This is the path that we have to follow, if we really want to be happy and satisfied, because it's impossible otherwise. Selfishly trying to exploit everything and anyone here in this material world, that means we are still alone. We'll always be alone. Although we might be claiming somebody is our friend, somebody is our relative, or partner, or whatever. You'll be always alone. And as Prabhupada said, putting faith in anyone as such, it's called illusion. There's one statement, Srila Prabhupada said, these are all called, even relatives or friends, they're called fallible soldiers. Like you put trust you have on the battlefield or something, there's a war going on, whatever, you know, you have some faith that somebody will protect, or whatever. That's some kind of an analogy. But they're not able to do that, so they're fallible. So in a similar way, when death comes, like in front of Yamaraj here, like Ajamil here, what could he do? What to speak Yamaraj? Even just Yamadutas, who were his representatives. Nobody could help him. Gajendra, story of Gajendra. Who could help Gajendra? No one. He was left alone. He understood finally that my only shelter is actually the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Nobody else is able to help me. Although I may be investing so much time and energy in building up relationships or this and that, even if we try our best, actually we are always alone here in this material world. Absolutely always alone. And that's what makes everyone depressive. Once we realize that. When you're in illusion and you think everything is fine, everybody loves me, or blah, 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 or whatever, all this kind of stuff. You know, then to some extent we're okay. But sometimes we do realize actually, you know, it's really hard to have a real good friend. Sometimes in spiritual life, unfortunately. That's a real tough one to digest. But that's what we need. That's the only way actually really to survive this material existence. You may be having anything in this material world, whatever you may be trying to achieve, like it's stated here, in any particular position, but it's all useless unless you have someone to share it with. And whom you can share it with, whom you can have trust nowadays in. So difficult. Why? Again, because people are under lower modes of material nature and they're so selfish and so conditioned. So we are all alone. And even in spiritual life, like Prabhupada gives this wonderful analogy, you know, spiritual practice ultimately means you learn also to some extent how to practice. And then, you know, you're on your own. He's giving an analogy of the flying in an airplane. At some point you will be having an instructor with you, but at some point, again, you have to fly yourself. And you're in the plane. Nobody can help you. Can you ask other plane to help you while you're flying up? Very tough, difficult. It won't work. You have to fly it alone. So in one sense, yes, we have to learn to be actually, and that we are actually all alone. In one sense. Unless there is either Guru or Paramatma. Because what means guidance? Even though we might be flying up in the air, we are still connected to the central tower. We have a connection. So that's Guru who gives us instructions. So we have connection. Or you may say, compare it also to either Guru or Paramatma. Doesn't matter. They're always our best friends. So we have a connection. So we are not, in spiritual life at least, we are not alone. But in material life, it's all very superficial. Like, you know, especially in terms of relationships, you know. Sometimes suddenly it may happen, like one boy came the other day and he said, I was with one girlfriend and this and that, and suddenly she told me, you know, there is some problem, so we cannot be together anymore. So I said, how come it happened suddenly? Nothing happened suddenly. You know. He thought just suddenly something happened. And nothing happened suddenly. Anyway, whatever. But the point is, you know, we have so much faith, we put so much faith, trust, expectations, whatever, hopes, this and that, in someone else. And then, again, it just turns out very quickly that to be something completely different and something else. This is material world. Why? Again, because everybody is selfish. Everybody is just looking for their own sense gratification. Whatever suits, take it. Whatever doesn't, forget about it. Who cares about it? So this is this material principle of hankering and lamentation. And this material body, therefore, as described here, is offering living entities a chance to try to fulfill all these different unsurmountable desires. Trying. Just to try. Subtle bodies trying, giving us a chance, actually. I mean, it's giving us a chance to try to fulfill all these different kinds of desires. And we may be trying and trying and trying, and ultimately, until we realize actually that it's not possible, in whichever situation we are, even if you're in the situation, even if you get position of a demigod, that it's factually worthless to be endeavoring on such a path, and unless we surrender to the Supreme Personality of God, we'll again never be happy and satisfied. And then only at that point, when we surrender to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, then only we'll be free from any kind of punishment, as we see here, something that is awaiting, or supposedly awaiting. We know that actually Ajamila was saved from being punished. He was given another chance. So if you want to be given another chance, then definitely we have to start following on that particular path of surrender to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, following the principles that have been given here. And then we'll be excused from being entangled and punished. Because it's not that we're going to be just punished, like when we were talking two months back, we had this chapter, Hellish Planetary Systems. It's not that just hell is somewhere else. Hell is already experienced here. We are daily, practically, in one sense, experiencing hell. This whole material world is a hellish place. It's not that we have to go somewhere else to have that kind of experience. It's already going on. So one wonderful analogy in Bhagavatam, also just, which has been actually just earlier here, Just to repeat it again, it says that as we understand the nature of the summertime, now, so we can understand that when the next summertime comes, it will have the same characteristics. So now, while in this body, in this conditioning, we understand how much, you know, suffering and misery is, and all these different kinds of things are going on, then we should understand also that if we take another body, the situation is going to be practically the same. Or even some people think, you know, in the future things will be better. In the future, Mumbai will get rid of pollution. And in the future, Mumbai, I heard they're building another bridge or something. Some another connection, like from Bandra to Vashi. Something else is planned. Whatever. Anyway, or any such kind of project. So in the future, things will be better, this and that. It's all illusion. It's all absolute illusion. So until they realize, actually, that there is no hope, that this material world is always based on the principles of hankering and lamentation, and unless we endeavor to get out of this conditioned situation, you know, we'll be always suffering, always practically suffering. But when we realize that there is a real friend and that we are not alone, that there is somebody who cares, that there is somebody really who has a deep love, appreciation for us, and that actually can be realized by the spiritual practice, then hey, you can fly anywhere you want. And you can be free, really. You won't be conditioned. And you won't be miserable. You won't be depressive, realizing that there is no one who really, you know, cares. So that kind of situation is possible by the practice of chanting Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Okay, we'll stop here. Hare Krishna, are there any questions or comments? Yes, please.
Hare Krishna Bhaji. In previous few verses back, it was mentioned witnesses, 12 witnesses. So in that it's mentioned that super soul is also one of the witness. And that is Yamadutas are telling. And then we also hear that Yamadutas were considering Yamaraj to be the supreme, no one above him. So is it mentioned that what conception they had about super soul? Because super soul, if one knows, if Yamadutas were knowing about him, they should have been knowing that super soul is the supreme lord.
Not necessarily, because they're independent. Independent, you know, like super soul. super soul records your activities, like upadrashta anumanta, overseer and permitter. That is there. And now, how super soul is connected to Yamaraj or Chitragupta, who is recording all the sinful activities? So might be, so in that sense you may say Chitragupta is the one, maybe not Yamadutas themselves. Yamadutas are the ones who are just dispatched, go and bring that person. It's not that they are necessarily aware that they are. Are they mentioned as witnesses? Yamadutas? Maybe Chitragupta in that sense, but maybe not all of them. You know, like you have a hierarchy. Not necessarily, at least that's my understanding, not necessarily everybody is involved. Like I know one story, there was that Jan Stevenson. He's pretty much famous. He left his body just two years back, last year, something like this. So one case he presented, it happened here in India, that one man was, by mistake, he had an experience of, actually in many cases it happens, Yamadutas come and people have experience of Yamadutas. And then they were told, actually, no, you're not the right person, actually it's somebody else. So sometimes they make a mistake. So, not from that, at least from those kind of accounts, you can understand that not necessarily they're direct witnesses to somebody's particular activities.
No. I'm not telling about Yamadutas. Super. Yamadutas mentioned super soul also being one of the witnesses.
Yes.
One of them, 12 witnesses.
Yes. Super soul is witness, yeah.
Yeah. So, super soul is supreme lord, right?
Yeah.
So then, still we hear that Yamadutas had conception that
Yamaraj is the supreme. There is no one beyond him.
But that's what I'm saying. They are not aware necessarily about the supreme lord. They're just executing their particular duties under the Yamaraj himself.
Means to understand in this way that super soul, they knew that super soul is one of the witness, but they did not know who super soul is, like that.
Maybe they didn't even know that super soul is witness. Maybe they, I don't know, that's speculation. That's maybe, you know, like philosophical speculation. But maybe they even know, but definitely if it's supreme or not, they might know. Because many times you see that even demigods, they don't know sometimes who is the supreme personality of Godhead. Sometimes Lord Shiva is considered, sometimes Brahma, sometimes even demigods worship another higher demigod or this and that. Sometimes they're also an illusion. That's what I said, like this, what we discussed about Dharma, to understand the real principle, the highest principles of Dharma, it's sometimes pretty subtle, pretty difficult. So not necessarily everything, all kinds of, all these particular, like Bhagavatam, Amala Purana knowledge is disclosed to them. Or they might be aware absolutely about it. We'll discuss later. But in essence, you know, they might not know, basically. They might not be aware. That's at least how I understand.
Hare Krishna. So you are talking about friendship in Krishna consciousness. So what you say is true also. Once Prabhupada is saying, when the interest comes, then people, you know, leave away. When the interest comes. Also, you are talking about Guru and Super Soul. But also one place Prabhupada is saying, I don't know the right word, I'm not getting, if you have one friend in Krishna consciousness, life becomes easy. So what it means? What is real friend or genuine friend? I don't remember, but like that, it's a statement. If you have one friend in Krishna consciousness, life becomes easy.
Yeah. You have to have somebody to call. Like it said, you know, whenever you're dadati pratigrinati guyam akyati prichati bhunkte bojayate chaiva. You have to have somebody to relate to. Otherwise, it's impossible. That's why I say, even in material life, you know, if you don't have even artificial, whatever, on whichever level that kind of relationship might be, you just have to have someone to confine your mind to. You have to have somebody to reveal your mind. You have to have someone to do, you know, give prasadam, accept prasadam, to give gifts, accept gifts, open your mind to hear somebody. It's otherwise, it's impossible to sustain yourself in any particular position. So there has to be, you have to find, I don't know, you know, it just has to be someone. Definitely there is.
Other than Guru and Super Soul?
Other than Guru and Super Soul, of course. But in spiritual life, that depends, just on the purity. Of course, level of, you know, whether Kanishta, Madhyam, Uttam, also. Sometimes it depends, because sometimes, you know, if somebody is on Kanishta level, he might be materially motivated for different reasons. I'm maybe associating with this one or that one. That's very low level, you know, of friendship, so to say. So there are different levels of friendship also, you know. Like. But if you know, what means friend? Somebody really who is ready to sacrifice so many things for you. Do you, like it said, the friend in need is a friend indeed. Indeed, deed means he's going to do something. He's going to sacrifice something that you can understand. And of course, with association, you know, you build up relationships. Relationships are not just, you know, something just by seeing or this and that. You know, you're doing service together, you do things together, you stay together. Naturally, you're going to be serving prasadam, getting prasadam. You build up relationships. So after some time in bhakti yoga, definitely there has to be somebody who's going to be a little bit appreciative and loving and, you know, caring and stuff. Otherwise, you know, then what kind of devotion they're practicing also, you know. So there has to be some kind of level of friendship. Maybe not very intimate one, but at least some level. But in the course of time, you know, if you stay with someone longer or whatever, some intimacy is definitely going to be developed. It's through service. Like marriages earlier, for example. Marriages, you know, they're not like done through horoscope and arrangements and stuff like this. You know, of course, with some deeper meaning. But it's not that, you know, like Prabhupada in his case, or I don't know, even Gandhi, you know, like once one reporter asked him, you know, how you met your wife and stuff like that, you know. So he said, actually, our relationship built up in the course of time through the service. He said, we never knew each other before, but we developed affection. How? Through serving each other. So that's why serving devotees, serving Vaishnava, it's so important to build up that relationship and therefore feel secure, safe, happy and satisfied in spiritual life. Otherwise, it's impossible. And Krishna says, the one, the devotee who is very dear to me is the one who doesn't put others in trouble. It's in 12th chapter Bhagavad Gita. So if we want to be dear to Krishna, we have to understand we have to help each other. Encourage each other. That's a natural thing of the devotional life. That's why we stay together, that's why we serve each other. That's why we have to sometimes, of course, there's sometimes some things happen, you know. But anyway, we have to transcend this. We have to, again, service, exchange. We have to develop loving relationship, because if we don't, you know, cooperate, you know, what did Prabhupada said? Cooperation, loving exchanges. We have to transcend this bodily conditioning. We all have some crazy conditionings and horrible conditionings. But if we keep, you know, keep on pointing that somebody else is having and somebody else that we are, yeah, we all have. That's why we are here. But that's not what we should focus on. We should focus on how to transcend those conditionings and trying to, you know, develop some higher, good, better qualities. Yeah?
Hare Krishna Prabhu.
Hare Krishna.
Just adding to your explanation about that Yamaduta's conception of the super soul and the Yamaduta's understanding about the religious principle. Like in the future also it will be evident that Yamaduta's don't know very clearly. Like you were telling, they were just performing some duties. So even though they had, they know what super soul is, the functionality of super soul. I mean, they were not very clear that super soul is Vishnu and Vishnu is superior. So that is what will be evident in future. So just I wanted to add that.
Okay.
So
hope that shed some light. Thank you. Okay, quickly one last question. Vijay.
Hare Krishna. You said that there is a different religious principle for demigods and humans.
Different what?
Different religion.
I didn't
different dharma for demigod and humans.
Yeah, okay.
But it is for Vedas, we understand that demigods also same dharma and humans also same dharma, because ultimately they have to surrender a Lord, Supreme Personality. Because their lifestyle is high or our lifestyle is low. But dharma is same, because ultimately their goal is to surrender and they have to follow instruction of higher Supreme Personality.
Yeah, Sanatana Dharma.
Sanatana Dharma.
Same for everyone.
Same for us. Principle does not change.
Yes, that is always the same.
Always.
But according to our conditioning, that means as long as you, Sanatana means you have to identify with yourself as a spirit soul, at least to some extent. That is the level of where Sanatana Dharma starts, when you understand principles of Sanatana Dharma. But until you start understanding that, you have to practice like Varnashram Dharma. There, the principles are different. Dharmas differ according to position and condition.
Our Dharma is Sanatana. There are many artificial Dharma. Yeah,
yes, but until you know, you see, many people don't know that Sanatana Dharma is the ultimate thing that everybody should follow.
Yeah.
They don't know that.
So there
come to that level, at least you have to practice some kind of Dharma.
Right.
Somebody will say, my dharma is better, your dharma is not so good, or stuff like that, you know. So there are different, you know, misunderstandings about it. Until you come to the level of Sanatana Dharma, where everybody is on, you know, absolute platform. Yeah. Okay. So we'll end it here. Thank you very much. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Shila Prabhupada ki jai.